You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino. This is not just a special edition.
This is the specialist
edition. The specialist edition of
it
the
podcast. It doesn't get any specialer than this.
I have in my hands two champagne glasses.
That's true.
One of which you dubbed 12th Man Champagne, which is 12th Man with Blue Skittles in it.
Champagne with Blue Skittles.
And we have a couple of special guests with us. We have
Mike Carcino, Nick Walker.
And Nick made the trip all the way from Texas to join us to watch the Super Bowl.
And I'm leaving at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
And routing through the Denver airport.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
It'll be great. By interesting, you mean great.
So I think we buried the lead here, which is we just won the Super Bowl.
That happened.
Yes.
That's the thing.
This is real life right now.
It really is.
If this is a dream, I haven't woken up from it yet.
We talked about how you don't know how to react when you win something in the city of Seattle, and that's kind of played out. I don't know what to do.
Not a thing.
Should we be turning over cars right now?
That's my opinion. As we go out in the streets,
there
we start riots.
Celebratory gunfire.
In the city of Renton, you shoot your gun into the air.
I think that's probably
city
true
of Renton,
in Boulevard.
Home of the Seahawks.
That's true. I think that's probably true in Boulevard Park as well. I'm not there to verify, but I'm assuming that's the case. Yeah, so that was pretty awesome.
It was probably the greatest defensive performance in NFL history.
I mean, that's a bold claim, but when you talk about the arguably the number one offense of all time, holding it to 8 points, creating as many turnovers as the Seahawks defense did, scoring more points on defense than the Broncos scored on offense, that's incredible.
Yeah, would you weigh it up? Like, you weigh it versus other performances? I mean, there may have been greater playoff performances, but Super Bowl performances against Peyton Manning and literally the best offense of all time. I don't know how you find one better.
I mean, what were people's impressions of the game, I guess, just to start off with?
Well, I think my general impression was I overrated the Denver Broncos. Really. And I was saying this to you, I felt like the Seahawks had about a 55% chance of victory. We'll talk a little bit more about Nostra Tristan later. But
of course we will.
I felt like the Seahawks had about a 55% chance of victory, and I said that on the podcast, but it actually kind of felt like more. During our discussion about it, I felt really confident in every aspect of the game, but I felt like there must be some way for the Broncos to break through this. I didn't know what it was going to be, but it felt like there had to be something, and there really wasn't.
I think the assumption was it would be Peyton Manning, and that was not it.
Well, actually, I think if I'm going to bring up my point of the game here is actually, I think we have to talk about the coin toss, because that's what really started everything off here.
Absolutely.
That was really something. I don't know if we've seen something like that before.
Joe Namath tries to toss the coin.
Joe Namath in a McLemore-esque.
Comes in.
Yes, that's very true. McLemore-esque jacket.
Yeah, thrifting his jacket.
And Terry McCauley comes in and snatches it out of midair so that they won't see whether it's a weighted coin or not.
No, Broadway Joe.
It was a deft play by Terry McCauley.
Really quick thinking, quick on his feet.
Swooped right in there and got that coin.
Made me feel good. It was not going to be a repeat of the Super Bowl that was canceled in 2006.
It almost makes me wonder, is that foreshadowing Malcolm Smith right there? The leaping in and grabbing. A show of things to come. So I think that's really where it all started off.
I agree with that.
Yeah. And just utter dominance in every way you can be dominant.
Offense, defense, special teams.
Special teams.
Coin toss.
Coin toss.
Just complete dominance.
And, you know, the whole week leading up to this, I felt so confident for some reason. I was zero angst. I mean, comparing San Francisco angst to Super Bowl angst, it was not even remotely close. And I had no logical reason to feel that confident.
I feel like there was some nervousness leading right up towards game time.
Right around 1 p.m. is when I first started getting nervous. It wasn't like the previous 2 weeks where against the Saints, if we would have lost, you have to look at the positives and negatives, right? If we would have lost to the Saints, your season is over and you're maybe watching the 49ers go to the Super Bowl, right? Or if you lose to the 49ers, you're watching Jim Harbaugh celebrate going to the Super Bowl on your home field. But if you lose here, the downside isn't necessarily that high. You've lost to the best offense of all time. So that kind of negates some of your fear about it. But also, I think that we're just so much better than the Broncos. In every aspect of the game, we've been better than the Broncos For 16 weeks out of the season, the Broncos have never faced anything like the Seahawks defense, and that's part of why I wasn't particularly nervous.
And my nerve, a little bit of nerves were just evaporated when, and the little bit I had, Cam Chancellor laid that hit on first quarter, first over the middle, just blew up Thomas.
That really set the tone. I mean, you knew that that's what the Seahawks wanted to do, and it's absolutely worked out. I mean, to me, you know, the situation was, if the Seahawks had lost to New Orleans, or even to a lesser extent to San Francisco, a lot of the discussion would have been about, oh, these are the weaknesses, these are, you know, the offense was bad at the end of the regular season, or, you know, Pete Carroll doesn't run a tight enough ship, or whatever. And a performance like this, it just completely validates everything the Seahawks did all season long. You cannot take anything away from them now.
There's no conversation about their weaknesses at any point here.
Like, now you're talking about, legitimately, this is one of the best teams of the last few decades. I mean, we could probably save that discussion for later, but
a greater view of how good they are in terms of historical view of the Seahawks. But let's start at the end. Let's talk about the MVP voting, with Malcolm Smith winning the Super Bowl MVP.
How about that? There have been some unlikely MVPs in the past in the Super Bowl.
Deion Branch.
A guy who was a 7th-round pick, who was not a starter almost the entirety of the season, you know, came in because of injury to KJ Wright, and then ends up making the two biggest plays of the Seahawks playoffs he's involved in. That's unbelievable. Unless you're a fan of the Percy Harvin kick return.
And he didn't get a lot of credit for the interception that he had that Richard Sherman tipped to him to win the NFC Championship. But Malcolm Smith finally getting credit for that play and everything that he did here and being really opportunistic, intercepting a pass and managing to take it 74 yards?
74.
74 yards for a touchdown in a play where it looked like he probably should have been tackled, and then coming up with a fumble recovery later in the game.
He's quietly had an amazing playoffs. I mean, he stepped in for KJ Wright when KJ Wright was hurt. And KJ Wright wasn't good when he came back from the broken foot. I mean, there was no Percy Harvin, but he only played a small fraction of that game. Malcolm Smith was in the game, and it was part of a, you know, amazing defensive performance all the way through the playoffs.
Yeah, I felt like it was appropriate to give it to a defensive player because this victory so much started with the defense and obviously the Seahawks all season long. On the other hand, I mean, I feel like, you know, if you take away Malcolm Smith's couple of plays, you know, it changes the game, but I think the Seahawks still probably dominate, whereas I think if you talk about one player's impact on the game, what Percy Harvin did with the threat of the fly sweep and everything that he did to the Denver defense, and then on top of that, the kickoff return for a touchdown, that's why I felt he would have been my MVP.
I agree. I think it made sense that they gave it to a defensive player. But Percy Harvin actually could have been utilized even more during this game. Every single time he touched the ball, it was such a big play. Or even the times that he didn't touch the ball, it was a big play. Percy Harvin's impact on every single play that he was involved in was huge in this game.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that we saw. Where even though it was a defensive game, and I agree that they had to probably give the MVP to a defensive player, just because we had such a great defense during that game, but I think it really alleviated some of the concerns that people had about Russell Wilson, the offense not going to be enough. Yep. And especially against this Denver defense, which we saw was really not enough here. We really were able to stick it to them.
Can you make a case for any other defensive player for MVP?
Cam Chancellor.
Yeah, definitely Cam Chancellor.
Do you think he's the defensive MVP of the playoffs?
Definitely. I mean, him and Earl Thomas, I'd say, are our two most important players on defense. And Cam Chancellor's physical presence there and setting the tone is just couldn't be replaced. You can't replace Cam Chancellor's physical presence on that defense.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of guys who are known as big hitters, but they compromise by giving up big plays because they're not good in coverage. And Cam Chancellor, you get the whole package. You get everything with him. He's just on another level.
Calls him a death backer.
Backer. He invented the position.
Death backer, yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We don't want to talk about the future too much. But, man, the contract extension that Cam Chancellor signed last summer, looking pretty good.
Well, yeah,
it is.
Malcolm Smith had these huge opportunistic plays, and it feels kind of bad taking something away from Malcolm Smith because everybody played great, right? But a lot of what Cam Chancellor did couldn't even register in the stats. He had the interception and the big hit on Julius Thomas, which doesn't show up in the stats. But then you also look at somebody like Richard Sherman, who took away one half of the field. no pass to Richard exactly. Sherman's side of the field was successful. And I think that's kind of what hurt Sherman throughout the entire season. And it well, didn't hurt him. He did great throughout the season.
He did pretty
well. But what hurt him in the Defensive Player of the Year voting is that Richard Sherman's not getting the ball thrown to him. He's just shutting down half of the field against these quarterbacks.
Least targeted corner in the league and led the league in interceptions.
That's a nice combo.
And yeah. And you wonder if, you know, when you get to that level, if you get to a certain level where you're actually getting to a point where people don't really respect you and don't see you as much because, you know, you're not in the spotlight anymore. You're so good that you're not headlining anymore because in his case he's not being thrown to at all.
And I talked about how we didn't take home any hardware as far as awards for the season, but we obviously took home the most important hardware for the season.
Super Bowl MVP is the best individual honor.
Defensive Player of the Year be damned. Not too concerned about finishing fifth and third in that voting right now.
I think the other guy you can make a case for as far as MVP is Cliff Avril. You know, the pressure was a big part of both Peyton Manning interceptions, and he was kind of the leader of that. I think we expected it to be Michael Bennett, but he ended up playing inside and wasn't a big factor, and it was Avril from the edge. Ended up, I think, with a couple of quarterback hits, a couple of passes defense, several big plays throughout the game.
It's an interesting thing to look at. So the Seahawks get pressure from so many different places, right? With Michael Bennett coming up as a free agent, that's a big part of the conversation. And you have to wonder, Chris Clemens was really present in this game, had a lot of pressure, something that we haven't seen from a lot of games. Bruce Irvin is kind of a non-factor, but potentially without Bennett, maybe could move inside and could be somebody who they could be using to pressure the quarterback a little bit more. But it really showed that the Seahawks can get pressure from all these different places, and it doesn't just have to be Michael Bennett. It doesn't even just have to be Cliff Avril or Chris Clemens. They can get pressure from all sorts of different places.
So I guess that sort of leads into how the Seahawks shut down this high-powered Denver offense. And, I think that was a big part of it. So they came out and basically played in nickel packages the entire game. I don't know if there was any situation other than maybe, you know,
and I think that's what really limited Bruce Irvin, too.
Yeah, he ended up playing, actually, he played inside as kind of a defensive tackle in pass rush situations. It was the only time he got in the field. We didn't see a lot of Brandon Mebane, who was a big factor all season. We didn't see a lot of Red Bryant. He also played pretty much exclusively defensive tackle instead of his normal defensive end spot. So it was kind of an entirely different personnel. But the Seahawks' depth was such that they were able to adjust and match up very well with the Broncos.
And we knew that one of the key places on the field was going to be those intermediate routes, right? We knew that was a place that the Broncos were going to be targeting, and they did a lot. Peyton Manning passed the ball and had a lot of completions, the most completions in NFL history, but still didn't pass for that many yards in this game, only going for 280, under 300, despite having 34 completions.
Yeah, his average completion was less than 10 yards, and in the regular season, he averaged over 12 yards per completion.
And they really were hitting that middle of the field by making sure that every single time somebody caught a pass there, they were hit as hard as they could, or every single time that somebody was trying to catch a pass there, they were hit as hard as they could. They completely eliminated pick routes, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And eliminated quick screens by just moving past the defenders.
And we've been so great at those sniffing out those screens.
Oh, yeah.
Screens of all kinds, all year. Wide receiver screens, just screens been... I can't think of very many successful screens run against this.
I think there's a lot of that before the game. If we were going to be able to stop the screens that Denver runs, I mean, it's pretty obvious that we're able to.
I mean, the number one thing that stood out to me was just flowing to the football. The linebackers, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas to a lesser extent, they were all playing downhill, and they were playing with such speed, and there was no yards after the catch. So maybe there's a completion, but it's 5 yards, and that's all you're going to get. And you're going to have to be perfect to pick up a first down. Yep. So that didn't end up, I think, being the factor we expected it to be with maybe Wes Welker, who had 8 catches for 84 yards, or Demaryius Thomas, who ended up setting a Super Bowl record with 13 catches for 118
And their
yards.
Stats look good at this point because they passed the ball so much throughout the game.
They didn't feel like... It doesn't feel like a Super Bowl record for receptions or an 8 catch, 80-yard day for Wes Welker. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like we shut those guys down.
Yeah.
Just because we dominated so hard on defense.
I mean, I think part of that is, you know, playing a much softer zone in the second half.
Yes.
And much more conservative style to try to
a lot of too deep
take
as
time.
Well, which,
you know.
And the other reason it doesn't feel like that is the Broncos scored 8 points. So there's no real impact on the game with
the well, the other thing I would point out is the other three key receivers for them. Julius Thomas, 4 catches for 27 yards. Basically a non-factor. Yoshon Moreno, one of the best receiving backs in the NFL, 3 catches for 20 yards. And then Eric Decker, 1 catch for 6 yards.
Yeah, I think that's the real storyline there with their receivers there. It's...
So, I mean, you can give up a couple of those guys, but as long as you shut down everyone else, that's what's going to make it very difficult. And then the other factor is they put together some sustained drives, but they ended up turning the ball over time and time again.
Really, really crucial turnovers in Seahawks territory. And I think that's kind of one of the keys where the game was 15-0, right? Mm-hmm. And the Broncos turned the ball over. Malcolm Smith returns it for a touchdown. They were driving the score there. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be a football game.
Yep.
Right? At that point, I'm thinking the Broncos are going to score. They're going to take it and score a touchdown.
Hoping for a field goal.
Best case scenario, that the Seahawks limit them to a field goal. Instead, you get the turnover. Cliff Averill hits Peyton Manning's hand. Malcolm Smith comes up with it, takes it 74 yards. In such a key situation. And then you come back to the second half, and Demaryius Thomas catches a long pass. Byron Maxwell, boom, pops the ball out of Demaryius Thomas's hands, and the Seahawks recover the fumble.
So I think Malcolm Smith, obviously one of the two biggest plays in the game in terms of changing things around, where you're expecting, hoping for 15-3, and instead, boom, it's 22-0. And then the second play would be right out of halftime. Broncos are hoping, let's get a stop, get the ball, and then, you know, we're down three scores. But nope! Percy Harvin goes 87 yards the other direction on a pooch kick.
Ho-hum. No big deal.
It was such a crazy decision of them to pooch kick that, and it took so much time for the ball to get to Percy Harvin that the Seahawks were able to set up their blocking, and he had basically a free pass there.
You know, I don't even know if it was that bad of a kick. The coverage was just so terrible.
Which is the story of the Denver special teams all season long.
The whole coverage was on the one side of the field. One cut, that's to the house.
I think we also have to acknowledge our special teams all this entire season. I mean, they've been incredible for us.
Yeah. And showed
throughout
up.
This game, yeah. The same thing. It's constantly, they've been incredible.
And it's one of the places that we were looking at as the Seahawks, okay, they have a better defense, obviously. They have a slightly worse offense, but they are significantly better than the Broncos at special teams. And throughout this game, the Seahawks dominated special teams from literally the first kickoff.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Trinan Holiday decides to return the ball from the back of the end zone and comes out to the 13-yard line or so.
Yep.
And that was so demoralizing for them right off the bat. Every single time Trinan Holiday tried to bring the ball out, except for one, which he actually fumbled on, that was overturned. But except for one kick, he's being stopped before the 20-yard line. And they're having to work so hard for that. And then you pair that with the Percy Harvin touchdown, the Seahawks destroyed the Broncos and special teams in this game.
Yeah, such an enormous difference in field position to start drives throughout the game.
The Seahawks have had the best, I think they've had the best starting field position of any team in the league. Russell Wilson has, anyway. It's like they average like in the playoffs, they've averaged on like the 35-yard line or something like that. So it's unbelievable field position the whole playoffs. And I think Trinan Holiday actually might have died on the last week.
We're going to have to check that. That didn't show up on the injury report.
They didn't show it, but he may be dead.
But I think that goes back to something that, you know, the Seahawks have had this good field position throughout the playoffs, and the offense hasn't necessarily always been able to take advantage of it. And today they did. And, you know, they did a really good job of taking away the running game. I think that, you know, that played out as Denver hoped in terms of shutting down Marshawn Lynch. Mm-hmm. But the Seahawks were just able to find other ways, particularly on third down.
Third down conversions were huge. Huge. I remember Russell Wilson partway through the year saying, or the beginning of the year actually, saying that they could get one or two more third down conversions a game. It would make all the difference in the world. That's another two wins. And you could just see that translate in the playoffs. I mean, the difference between squeaking by in a playoff game, maybe just barely getting by on a win, versus what were they today? Did they have how awesome they were on third down today?
Today, 7 of 12.
7 of 12 is phenomenal. In the Super Bowl, that's
ridiculous. And that also includes some garbage third downs that they weren't really trying for.
Yeah, I mean, it was just another facet of the game where there was utter dominance.
And that's definitely a huge improvement from last year, I would say, also. I mean, our third down conversion, I think, last year was...
I mean, it's a huge improvement from 2 weeks ago.
Last week, the end of the season. Seeing those plays, we talked about this, how Russell Wilson was playing against the worst defense that we've played since the Vikings in week 12.
Before the bye.
Which is crazy.
Really played out here, very obviously, on these third down plays where he's having, okay, Doug Baldwin is open for a third down catch. Golden Tate is open for a third down catch. Jermaine Kearse is open for a third down catch. He's having open receivers on third down, and Russell Wilson did a great job in hitting those receivers also. But the separation that they're getting is so much more than they have against these really elite defenses that they've been playing at the end of the season.
And the other thing was making plays on the run outside the pocket. And they were the pass rush was not really a factor in this game. That's been such a big detriment to the Seattle offense throughout the season. And in this game, they were able to really neutralize Denver's relatively weak pass rush without Von Miller. Didn't hear much of Pot Roast. He drew that holding penalty in the red zone, but that was about it.
And I think he had a nice game, but
you can't expect a nose tackle to affect a game.
Exactly. And he did in the run. He really kind of dominated in the run. And the Seahawks were not a great running team. Yeah. But the thing is, if you get into, you run for 3 yards, maybe you're not running for 5 yards or a successful play, but you run for 3-3, and then you can pick up a third and short, you're moving the chains. And the Seahawks were able to do that really successfully.
So I think, number one, they were able to help that out by generating some run offense with Percy Harvin.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Russell Wilson in the read option. Denver was the first team that we saw in a long time that wasn't forcing him to keep the ball and to hand it off to Marshawn Lynch. Instead, he was keeping it giddy outside. And the common factor in there was that Robert Ayers had a really, really bad day.
And we were saying that this is something that they really haven't faced except for maybe one game from Terrell Pryor, right?
In many weeks, yeah.
In the AFC, there aren't as many read option teams as there are in the NFC. You're facing it almost every week in the NFC. But in the AFC, they're facing more traditional offenses, right? And the Broncos aren't used to defending against this. Also, in practice, you're defending against Peyton Manning, who has no threat of running at all.
He's part statue.
He's like on Mario, Super Mario 3, where you can turn into a statue.
He's a living sculpture.
The bear tail, and you can turn into a statue if somebody's coming at you. Peyton Manning could do that sometimes, and that's why the Seahawks didn't sack him.
He turned into stone.
He turned into stone a couple times. I'm so happy to be able to mention Mario 3 in here.
Yeah, that's really good work.
Seminal video game.
I think the other thing that stood out to me, completions to 8 different receivers, 5 different wide receivers, even without Sidney Rice. So obviously Percy Harvin back in that, but you get Ricardo Lockett for a big catch. You know, Jermaine Kearse making big plays, and then Golden Tate and Doug Baldwin, and so much for this pedestrian core of receivers.
Walking their way to the Super Bowl title, as Doug Baldwin would like to say.
The dialogue is that Peyton Manning throws to whomever is open, right? That was the whole conversation for these 2 weeks leading up to it. And then you have Russell Wilson coming back and completing passes to 8 different receivers, completing a pass to Ricardo Lockett, completing a lot of passes to Jermaine Kearse, his 4th receiver, somebody who was starting out as the 5th receiver before the season, and an undrafted rookie. Well, he's not a rookie anymore, but an undrafted player.
All right, well, I think we should move on and consider a little bit. Let's go back to some predictions we made, and specifically that you made.
No, Sir Tristan.
So first off, we're going to play some audio talking about the kickoff returns in this game. So here we go.
Percy Harvin returning a kick for a touchdown.
Wow!
Well, that turned out exactly right.
Yeah, that was really good.
I mean, that was pretty predictable. Denver's
terrible. Wow, that was really exciting.
It was. We could replay that over and over again. We want to save that.
You were shocked about me predicting Percy Harvin returning a kick for a touchdown.
It is a specifically bold prediction, but when you consider that Denver is terrible at covering kickoffs, and Percy Harvin, this year, he returned 2 kicks, and he returned them for an average of 70 yards.
Was it that bold? I may have heard that prediction 5 times at least, 10 times. Everyone was predicting Percy Harvin to return a kick. That was the hip prop.
So you're demanding something bolder.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen to this from week 10 of the NFL season.
When Jermaine Kearse catches a touchdown in the Super Bowl, knock on wood, knock. People are going to be looking at that Pro Football Reference page. Now, for this one, I was just going out on a limb, right?
Considering you were first predicting the Seahawks were going to be in the Super Bowl.
There are a lot of predictions going on in this one.
It's a made-up prediction.
Now, this was before Nostra Tristan existed.
That's true.
This is all
pre-hat.
Yeah. This is like a long-term bet. You don't know. It's a season-long bet. You don't know if it's going to come through until the end. It's not on predicting on a Wednesday and it comes through on Sunday. This is something that we predicted 8 weeks out, 10 weeks out. And I think I got lucky on this one.
He could have scored another touchdown. I mean, he did, you know.
We called the dogs off.
He kind of generated that one. It didn't look like he was going to score a touchdown, and he made something out of nothing, and that was probably the most exciting play for us, personally.
I would say that it's more about this prediction. is about knowing that Jermaine Kearse is such an opportunistic receiver, and that when he catches the ball, he's thinking end zone because he only catches touchdowns. He's like Blake Griffin, all I do is dunk. Jermaine Kearse, all I do is catch touchdowns.
Or Chris Carter, all he does is catch touchdowns.
I think that was Chris Carter. He might have patented that. But, yeah.
But how awesome is it? Jermaine Kearse, you know, local guy, UW product, undrafted. Here he is scoring a touchdown, catching four big passes in the Super Bowl.
And I turn to Mookle the Kook here. Can I get a whose house?
Dog's house?
Kook's house.
Oh. This is, I mean...
Marcus Trufant's retired.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I do respect the hell out of Jermaine Kearse, so...
I may not like him, but I respect him.
I damn well respect him, so... but no, he had a huge game, as he's had multiple times in the course of the regular season. And I think, I mean, I don't know if he had enough of a effect to cause him to be, you know, seen by other teams next season. Because that's the only thing I worry about, is that if he gets to be too big, you know, that's another problem. Is he gets to be too big and he gets recognized, then that can limit his effect that he has.
I'll take attention away from Golden Tate, Percy Harvin, and Doug Baldwin.
Well, somehow the Seahawks will muddle along and find a way.
Honestly, most of the attention is on Harvin and Marshawn Lynch
right now.
That's a problem to have. I would say that I think Kearse is one of the guys I'm happiest for. I mean, is there anyone else that stands out to you guys?
Obviously. But his effect for our team has been maximized because he's unknown, so.
Jermaine Kearse, the most, I'll call it Seattle, we're going to say the greater Seattle area, the most Seattle through-and-through player. High school out of Tacoma, University of Washington, undrafted, signs of the Seattle Seahawks, boom, touchdown in the Super Bowl. The first Super Bowl for the city of Seattle since 1979.
First championship.
First Super Bowl for the city of Seattle.
Major male pro sports championship, says the guy who worked for the Storm. So he's up there. I think Michael Robinson is someone I'm really happy for. Went through that whole ordeal during training camp.
You know, I wouldn't be shocked if he retired.
I mean,
after what he's been through and, like, put his body through. And he has an obvious career waiting for him in the media.
Yep.
Like, yeah.
As clear as day. So
didn't know that he was going to be part of the roster. Ends up winning a Super Bowl.
I'm so looking forward to the real Rob report. Because there has to be an epic episode.
There's been some hints of it being actually recorded during the Super Bowl, so I don't know if that'll actually come to fruition.
That could be the realest Rob report.
It will be henceforth known as the realest Rob report.
All right, someone else I'm happy for, Travaris Jackson, a guy who was scapegoated by a lot of Seahawks fans in 2011. A lot of complaints about what a terrible quarterback he was, even though the stats indicate that he's pretty average. Comes back to the team as a backup quarterback, beloved by everyone, has a great season, ends up getting into the Super Bowl in a situation where it's
quarterback
not
quarterback at the end of the Super Bowl.
You also glossed over, he played with a torn pec.
Yep.
Which is an unbelievably painful injury.
Which is what went over, I think, the locker room for him.
Travaris Jackson has definitely earned the respect of Seattle and Seattle fans. We generally consider him to be the best backup quarterback in the NFL. And I think it was really cool seeing so many different guys get involved, right? Seeing Robert Turbin basically be the only running back in the second half. And then seeing Ricardo Lockin in the game. All these different players getting involved in the action. And Deshaun Sheed being involved in a really prominent place.
Well, I think that's something that stood out, was the Seahawks' depth, especially on the defensive side of the football. So they were able to rotate in a way that New England couldn't in the AFC Championship game. And then when you did have injuries in terms of, you know, Cam Chancellor going out for a little bit, and then Richard Sherman, his injury, other guys stepped up, and I don't think the Seahawks really missed much of a beat.
I mean, that's one of the places where, when we talk about Malcolm Smith winning the MVP award, is that depth has to come to mind, right?
Yep.
Is that the Seahawks' defense is all about depth. It's so much about next man up, and it's what really gives you confidence long-term in the Seahawks.
The other guy that stands out to me is, we've talked a lot about him, but Percy Harvin. This close to going on IR and his season being over, and he ends up making a huge difference in the Super Bowl. How about that?
Unbelievable. Pete came to him and said, we're going to go on IR, and that's what put him over the edge. Whatever it was, I don't care. First round pick, doesn't matter. Whatever we paid for him, completely worth it.
No, you can't hear anything about that ever again.
Yeah, everyone needs to stop. That's a dead narrative forever and ever.
It's really cool that, Percy Harvin, at literally the last moment that he could have remained on the active roster, stays on the active roster, and is one of the most important players, seriously, in the discussion for Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because there was also talk during the regular season of if we would bring him, try and have him back before we knew like how long it would be for his, how long he'd be out. There's talk of, you know, bringing him back during the playoffs as that extra punch that you have. And it's just more awesome that he comes back for the Super Bowl and has these huge plays for us to set us up.
It's pretty exciting for 2014.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to get there yet, but the potential of having Percy Harvin for 2014. You know, I heard a conversation about the Cardinals, and I mentioned this earlier, about having two first-round picks with getting Jonathan Cooper, their first-round guard, back. Or you look at the Rams having the second pick in the draft from Washington. The Seahawks get Percy Harvin back.
Yep.
Show me what you could do with the second pick in the draft, St. Louis, right? Because it's not going to be Percy Harvin plus another pick.
Oh, all right, well, to me, the last guy that really stands out that I'm really happy for is Pete Carroll. Such a validation. I don't think he necessarily needed a Super Bowl to validate it. Just getting here and having this team be as good as it is proved that his style can work in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But again, nobody can say anything about Pete Carroll after
this.
I'll
be the first to admit that I went from hating Pete Carroll's guts with a passion to completely putting my... I was wrong. I mean,
you
were so wrong.
You were quite wrong.
So, I mean, not when he was the coach of the Seahawks. He won me over quickly as the coach of the Seahawks, but as the coach of USC, I mean, hated Pete Carroll. Didn't take long to win me over, but I was very wrong, like you said.
The word redemption comes to mind with Pete Carroll, always, right? There's been this conversation for the last 2 weeks about all of Pete Carroll's failures.
There's been a lot of it.
Right? That's been basically the only conversation when it comes to Pete Carroll, is how he failed with the Jets, how he failed with the Patriots, how he needed to win the Seahawks over and the Seahawks crowd over. I know that you and I were very excited about Pete Carroll from the first moment.
Yep.
Partially because Jim Moore is the worst.
Fact.
I was saying that to Nick on the car ride earlier, is that how much do you hate Jim Moore right this second?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't want to lay it on Jim Moore, but the best thing about Jim Moore is that he led to the Seahawks having Pete Carroll.
His terribleness.
He was bad enough that they fired him after one season and hired Pete Carroll after that.
That's true. I mean, I think that, you know, you talk about the conversation was at his previous failures. I mean, I think they're recast now in a different light where it's like, man, it's crazy that this guy didn't work out in his first couple stops. And I think people realize that it was just bad timing or a bad fit. And he's found the perfect situation for himself and the results speak for themselves.
And to go crazy overreaction for Super Bowl. I mean, there's been plenty of coaches that have been terrible their first, you know, John Wooden wasn't that great to
begin with.
Bill Belichick was terrible to begin with, but I mean, they're looked at now as pinnacles in their profession.
And to think of somebody who might actually be perceived as similar to Pete Carroll, Jim Mora.
Yeah, well, that's
one true. One season with the Seahawks in the same way that Pete Carroll had one season with the Jets. Obviously, Mora was the coach of the Falcons beforehand. Goes to college and is able to kind of turn it around and maybe become a better coach through that process. And maybe Jim Mora will be somebody who in the future is perceived as one of the best coaches in the NFL.
False.
What?
False. He's the worst.
I, for one, did not expect so much Jim Mora talk in our Super Bowl celebration podcast. The other guy, I have to add one more person. Paul Allen saved the team from moving to L.A., has been an owner for, you know, I think almost 3 decades now in the NBA, a decade and a half in the NFL, and finally breaks through and wins a championship.
Absolutely. Awesome. Congrats to Paul Allen.
Yeah. Congrats, if you're listening.
Yeah. If you're listening to this right about now. Congrats. Yeah, I know it means a lot coming from us.
Shout out to Paul Allen.
An official fabulous PeltonCast shout out to Paul Allen.
We don't give those out easily, Mr. Allen. I hope you recognize how
just
how special
good pasta that is. Restaurants.
And I think if you're gonna say Pete Carroll and Paul Allen, you can't forget about Schneider, because he's also had a huge impact for our...
I mean, I think it's big for him, but like he didn't need this in the same way that
he
didn't, because he's kind of the golden boy.
He needs to be acknowledged, though.
But the most phenomenal photo of the playoffs. John Schneider posing with WWE Championship belt, shirtless.
You haven't seen this?
This is the greatest photo of all time.
It's worth pausing the podcast. And John Schneider gets a lot of respect in this because he's known as the person who pushed for Russell Wilson.
Yep.
And I had the thought a few weeks ago that maybe Pete Carroll is not that different from somebody like Ken Wisenhunt, who is somebody who couldn't really settle on a quarterback. You know, that might have been his problem in a few different places. But John Schneider said, this is your quarterback, this is who we're going to draft, and really supported him, and then also filled out all of these other players. He's the one who got the two undrafted wide receivers who were catching touchdowns in the Super Bowl. The seventh round draft pick. This I'm looking at the phone. It's him with Christian Michael.
I can't believe you've never seen
it. The seventh round draft pick linebacker who's NFL MVP. The cast off running back who's the story of Super Bowl week.
For how much? What we give Buffalo?
I believe a fifth round pick.
Fourth and a fifth.
Fourth and a fifth round pick.
I mean, should we mention Russell Wilson is kind of one of the heroes today? I mean, yeah.
He's so glossed over because it was just quietly Russell Wilson.
And I
too short to be a quarterback in the NFL. Personally thought
that maybe he should have won the MVP for the game. Those third down conversions were so huge. He had the two touchdown passes. You know, all the credit's going to go to the defense and special teams, but the offense played a hell of a game. They only punted one time, if I'm correct. The offense played one of the best games that the Seahawks offense has played all season long. It's just that the defense played so good of a game that it kind of overshadows how great of a game Russell Wilson played.
I mean, I think he said it well all season long. Why not us?
Yeah.
Why not us? And there was no reason. It just turned out.
Russell Wilson.
But when we talked about it, wait, I want to go back really quick to the Nostra Tristan conversation. And
of course you
obviously. I did my best. I predicted a Jermaine Kearse touchdown in the Super Bowl. Predicted a Percy Harvin kickoff return touchdown in the Super Bowl. But the thing that I didn't predict was the kind of domination that the Seahawks would have in the Super Bowl. And I wish that I would have been more confident to predict this, because I was feeling it all along. I was feeling from week one, when I was constantly telling you how terrible the Broncos are.
That's true.
You're consistent about that.
They were the team, and they were always kind of the yin to the Seahawks yang, right? It wasn't the 49ers. It wasn't the Patriots. It wasn't the Panthers. It was the Broncos. It was going to be the Seahawks and the Broncos from week one.
The Magneto to our Professor X.
Absolutely.
I mean, how glad were you that it wasn't a nerve-wracking game again after the NFC Championship?
It was such a weird feeling to be just watch its dominance.
Kind of, almost a bit of a letdown, I have to say. I'm very happy to be part of...
Don't even start with this.
The biggest ass-kicking since 2003.
It saved several years on my life, I guarantee.
That's true.
You
several
would be
gray
right
hairs
now.
On that.
But the biggest regret that I have is not predicting this kind of domination in the Super Bowl, because I saw it coming from week two from the Broncos. I knew that these Broncos were not a team that could compete with the Seahawks. The only team, much respect to the 49ers, because I love the 49ers.
It's hard not to in retrospect. Like, the farther away we get from that game,
yes,
the more you just kind of... The 49ers are... They're awesome.
We made a moratorium on dwelling on that game, but I really, right now, that was the Super Bowl. Jim Harbaugh. I love Colin Kaepernick, right? In my win forever perspective.
Yes.
I love them. They're the only team who could compete with the Seahawks this season.
I mean, the thing is, you test us with a sorry squad like the Broncos, and that's the kind of result you're going to get.
Absolutely. I wish that we'd been playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Super Bowl.
Oh, come on.
Would have been more competitive.
Mike Glennon, that guy's up-and-coming quarterback.
Yeah, big time.
Mike James was out after that game, so it might not have been the
whoever
same.
Whoever was number 18 they had under center today is nothing compared to Mike Glennon.
Yeah, we're getting out of hand.
Oh, I have a question for you. What kind of hat are you going
to
buy?
A Nostra Tristan hat. I feel like it has to have a lot of... It's going to have gold beads tied around it. It's going to be purple. Purple and gold, I suppose. And purple, like, swooshes and swaths.
Turban-like?
Turban-like, definitely.
Johnny Carson-esque?
Johnny Carson. The amazing Kreskin-like.
Yes, Kreskin.
And it'll be purple with big swaths of fabric and gold beads hanging from it, but I'm not going to bring it out until next football season.
Yeah, I mean, you can't bring it out too early. You can't just predict things.
I'm going to waste this.
I'm going to retire it for the entire offseason. We'll still be recording Fabulous Pelton Casts. Trademark. We'll still be recording Fabulous Pelton Casts for the offseason, but I'm not going to bring out Nostra Tristan again until week one at CenturyLink Field on Thursday night, hosting the Denver Broncos or the San Francisco 49ers.
Any other final thoughts as we kind of wrap this up?
What an amazing year. The greatest football season I've ever been a part of. And I went to every game in the 2005 season.
I was like, did you?
I went to every single game in the 2005 season the last time we went to the Super Bowl, and this is not even comparable. And I haven't lived in the state for most of the season. So, unbelievable year. Couldn't ask for more. Everything, I mean, what could... Who has it better than us?
I mean, I think the word for me is surreal. I mean, it's just... I think for everyone, it just hasn't set in. I mean, we've finally done it, and... That's just, I don't know if it will set in. It may take a few weeks, it may take till next season, but.
I think it's that this Super Bowl belongs to us. Pete Carroll said it after the game. He said, this is for you, 12s. This is for the fans of Seattle who have been there with the Seahawks all year long, screaming as loud as we could. The only thing that could propel them past the 49ers in the Super Bowl and win this thing for the city of Seattle was the city of Seattle.
You know, to me, I think Mike said surreal, and I don't think it's going to set in so much as it's just, it's not the moment, but it's everything afterwards when, like, people have to refer to the Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks or the defending champion Seattle Seahawks. Every time you hear that, it will bring a smile to your face.
Exactly. Super Bowl champion. Richard Sherman.
Oh, yes. And I'm going to love
Yeah, we're pretty happy for Richard Sherman, too. We should throw him in there.
Not only will it bring a smile to many people's faces, it'll bring a frown to many other people's faces across the world.
It feels good to be hated.
God, I love to be hated.
You got to be good to be hated.
Exactly. There's been no hated teams besides maybe the Raiders.
The Patriots were kind of hated.
It was terrible.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah.
There's been no real hated teams that have been awful. So... It's awesome. It's really great.
Doesn't get any better than this.
Right. We'll be back on Wednesday with more thoughts on the Seahawks Super Bowl, which is crazy
to say. The parade?
We'll have thoughts on the parade, which we'll be at. And we'll be drinking Rainier on the streets, maybe?
Hopefully.
Can you do that? Is that legal?
Everything will be legal now. It's legal.
Everything's legal.
When in Rome.
And signing day for the UW Huskies.
Full coverage of UW signing day. Sorry, Mookle. Full coverage of UW signing day, and hopefully the announcement of Buda Baker coming to the University of Washington.
Knock on wood. All right, well, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for listening all season long. Thanks to Mookle and Nick for joining us.
And for the last time of the 2013-14 season, go Hawks.
Go Hawks.